All right, and we are joined here today by Michael Coppy. Michael, thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me here.
Yeah. Sounds like you listened to the podcast a little bit. You kind of know how we do things a little bit. And, you know, typically, we'll run down with maybe ask some of our guests kind of how they got into running, maybe some of the people who helped them get into it, some mentors or whatever their motivation was at the beginning. But you just recently performed a pretty amazing feat that I think most of our listeners are pretty aware of. So I really want to start with that and tell us a little bit about what you just accomplished, what, 2-3 weeks ago?
Yeah, maybe even 2 weeks ago, I think. But yeah, so I ran the Superior Hiking Trail. My goal was to try to get the FKT time there, and I ended up breaking the previous course record by 28 and a half hours. But to me, a big part of it too was not just, you know, breaking the record, but, also doing the fundraising that came along with it. And then also, I think another sort of caveat about this whole thing was the previous record holder was 25 years old. I'll be 70 in a month and a half here. So there's a little difference there, you know, but I wanted to encourage people, not to get concerned about their age, to go out and do what they want to do. And you know, I think age is something we need to just ignore and just do what we feel like we can do. And so I wanted to inspire people that, you know, FKTs don't have to always be the youngest person.
Yeah. So let's keep on that age thing, because I definitely wanted to go down that road a little bit too, because I think that's a fascinating part of the story. And like you just kind of mentioned, you know, essentially, you know, sometimes it's just a number that's in our heads. Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about that. And was that a motivating factor for you, or was it something that you just kind of, hey, this is where I'm at, this is how strong I am, I can go do this?
Yeah, the age wasn't a motivating factor at all. It was more like you said. I have this chronological number that's on me, but I just do what I can do, and I knew that I could, you know, accomplish a certain number there. I wasn't, of course, it's such a long endeavor and it's such a rugged course. You never know when you start out what's going to happen, because the year before I tried it and didn't make it, you know. But to me, it was just a goal that I set, and the age had nothing to do with it. The only other part that was the big factor was the fundraising. So
That's I think the age, your age, has been kind of a focal point for both attempts. And like you mentioned last year, you attempted the fastest known time as well, and then about a year later, go for it again. And I remember both times, you know, it's out in the front, 68-year-old runner goes for the fastest known time, 69-year-old runner goes for the fastest known time. Do you think after the first attempts, failed attempt, did you have any kind of uncertainties of like, maybe I am too old for this, you know?
Actually, I felt more confident the second time. And, you know, I did talk to... Well, I ended up with a stress fracture the first time. And my physician said that you're actually going to be stronger after this because of the fracture. And so, it helped me to realize that that wasn't going to be something that was going to hinder me, so that I could just forget about it. And I think the thing I learned was I was a little more humbled by the trail, even though I had previously run every section. You know, over a 2-year period, I had run the whole trail section by section. But it's a little different when you go out there and try to do it 24 hours a day until you're done.
Yeah.
That's a totally different animal. And
yeah. And
when I started it the first time, I just didn't realize how that, the concentration that's needed to keep going.
Yeah.
Because the terrain is either mud, roots or rocks almost the whole time, and you have to be thinking about and then following the course, of course.
Yeah.
You got to have such concentration.
Wow.
You can't let up at all. And so to have all that, I didn't realize that from just doing section after section. But when you have to do it continuously for 24 hours a day, you know, day after day, that's when it really, you know. So I went in the second time with a lot more respect for the trail, and a less aggressive attitude towards the pace. I think I was, and I trained harder. I had a professional coach, Stephanie Howell, was training me. I was better prepared physically.
Yeah.
So I think, and I had a much bigger crew and better crew, an experienced crew, because they had been with me last year as well, plus new people. So I, in every aspect, I went into it better prepared.
Yeah. So I want to touch on the point of really being focused, because, you know, having done some long days on the SHT, obviously there are sections that are impossible to run or use more energy that's necessary, and then other sections where you can kind of make up the time because it's, you know, slight downhill, less rocky, really. Is that kind of what you mean by focusing and saying, like, oh, I should run this section now because it looks pretty runnable? I just know sometimes I'm, like, walking up a hill, and I get to the hill, and it's easy running, but I'm still walking. I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, my mind's elsewhere. Like, oh, yeah.
Well, all of that, but I think just the focus of, you know, you're running through the day and then through the night.
Yeah.
You know, every foot plant has to be thought of. There's no shuffling. There's no sort of letting your mind wander, because you can just enjoy the, or even, I mean, I missed half of the scenery because you can't get, put your head up for a second to look at the scenery because you're going to trip. You know, there's something there to trip you. So that's really the part that, you know, is hard, is the constant focus that you have to have. And then it's also to keep your pace going when you can go. I mean, you do have to keep that pace going. And, and then you have to remember when you come in to meet your crew, that's got to be a quick turnaround. You know, there's so many. I think we figured out I met my crew roughly 50 times. I don't remember the exact number, but, you know, if I spend 5 minutes there or 10 minutes there, it makes a huge difference.
Oh,
or even more, you know. So it's very easy to get into meet the crew and then spend too much time there. And when you multiply that times 50 times, it really adds up.
Wow, yeah.
So all those things have to stay in focus, you know, and I asked my crew to help me with that as well. But that's one thing about this trail, is it's unlike some other trails where you can run and not have to watch the terrain all the time. This one, you almost have to be focused 100% of the time.
Right. Can we talk about some of the numbers?
Oh, sure.
So, you went from the Canada border to the Wisconsin border, which is how many miles?
310. I added a few extra, of course, and most people do. You know, I got lost a couple times. I think we figured out about 4 miles extra, which was good, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not bad.
No.
Only 4 miles.
Only 4 miles. And what was the final time that you...
The final time was 5 days, and officially they say 4 hours, but it was 5 days, 3 hours, and 44 minutes. Yeah.
And so that averages out to how many miles per day, roughly? Or can you just kind of give our listeners an idea of, like, it's hard to say. It's not like a marathon. You look at minutes per mile.
Sure.
I mean, do you say miles per day? Do you say average miles per hour? Or, I mean,
well, I know the first 2 days I was right around the 75 miles per day, you know, 24-hour day, and but then I know after that I slowed up a fair amount, and a bunch of that was sleep deprivation, especially after the 3.5 days was starting to get to me, which I hadn't calculated. That I thought I'd be okay with the 2 hours a day that I was planning on, but it got to me after 3.5 days. So
naturally.
Yeah.
So I suppose 300 divided by 5 days, you know, roughly 60 miles per day on average.
Right.
And how many hours of sleep did you have in that 5 day?
8.5 hours total. Should have been a little more.
Wow. And finally, and I think this is maybe one of your most important metrics, numbers, what was the total fundraising?
Oh, yeah. So our total amount was $20,270. I think that's within a few dollars of the total.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's all. That was all towards the Superior Hiking Trail.
Exactly. Okay. Yes, right.
And what were your motivations for raising money?
Well, I mean, I even if I wasn't doing this FKT, I love to train on the Superior Hiking Trail. And so I run there almost all of my long runs for sure are there. And, you know, even a lot of my shorter runs, I just love the trail. And I, you know, the various spots like through Jay Cook, I probably know those, you know, backwards and upside down, but, the whole trail is just such a jewel to have in our own backyard.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people are aware of what this trail is and the if you want to just look at vistas, there's so many gorgeous vistas that I couldn't even mention half of them. And then,
and then
just the trail itself, to have this kind of quality trail, is just, I think it's, man, to me, it's such a gift to have this. And, you know, we have a lot of trails in Duluth, mm-hmm. and besides the SHT. But and one example is I go down to Indianapolis every year to teach a woodworking class at a school down there. And when I'm down there, of course, I'm always looking for trails to run. Mm-hmm. And Indianapolis, I have to drive an hour and a half to find a trail that's 12 miles long.
Wow.
And it's only 12 miles long. And it's the longest trail in the whole state. And so we just don't, you know, I didn't realize the kind of gift we have here in Duluth.
Yeah.
Until you go some other place.
Yeah.
You know, and realize that. And the quality of our trail, the SHT is, I mean, any obstacle, they've put bridges up, they've put, boardwalks over dams, they've done, certainly it needs work, constant work, but man, they've done so much work to keep that up.
Right.
I can't, and I organize a small group of volunteers and we do trail work in Hermantown where I live.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know what it's like just to keep the weeds down, let alone building, things.
Uh-huh.
So I really appreciate the trail, and I wanted to show that, that I do appreciate it. And one way was to put out a challenge.
Uh-huh.
And so the challenge I put out this year was that I would match $7,500, if it would be matched, and I would match that. And boy, I couldn't believe that it was, farly exceeded. That was just great. So. When you and I were running, we hadn't gotten the match, and I said that I was going to stay 10 feet from the finish line until the match came. I threatened that, but luckily I didn't have to do that,
Luckily.
Mike, you were talking about you were going to crack into your savings account and get the help so I wouldn't have to stay there 10 feet away. But
Yeah, it's worth the money to. I couldn't stand to see you stand at the this far away, the
right.
clock ticking.
Right,
that
right.
just, yeah. Well, that's pretty incredible to not only set out on this insane endeavor. We'll say that insane endeavor with not one goal but two goals and smash them both. That's
yeah,
crazy.
And and that was really with the help. I mean, first of all, my crew. There's no way you can do something like this without a crew that's really dedicated and willing to give it all. And
mm-hmm.
boy, they put in 110%. I thought my job was the easiest job because all I had to do was keep putting one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
They had to get from point A to point B, which was many times hard and,
right.
Hard to find some of these crossroads and at night. And mm-hmm. then to make sure they get there in time before I get there, and
right.
then to have food ready for me and have and look after my needs. I was weighted hand and foot.
Mm-hmm.
Man, they had a hard job, and they didn't get much sleep because they were always moving.
Right.
So, in fact, that was, if I can go into a little story, if you got to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So after the third day, we were coming into the third evening. And one of my crew members came up to our crew captain and said, "Hey, we had three pacers up to that point," and she came up and told our crew captain, "The pacers are wore out. They can't pace you tonight. They just don't think they can do it. So yeah. You got to go on Facebook and put a yell out and try to get somebody up here to help pace them."
Yeah.
And he put a thing on Facebook, and one of the actual record holders from our previous time of this course, AJ, volunteered from the cities. He said, "I'll come up and pace me for 60 miles, which was great. And so he was on his way up, and we got a call at about 9 o'clock that night that his car broke down in Cloquet.
Oh, wow.
And so now I'm not aware of any of this. I'm just running, you know, and I'm getting towards where my crew is going to be for this night stint that I'm going through. And this happened to be that night I was going to be doing the longest section, which was 14 miles before I would see my crew again.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also a stretch where it was almost, a lot of it was ledge rock, which is very hard to follow the trail on ledge rock because, you know, just the blue stripe on the rock, you don't see that stripe until you're on top of it.
Right.
So you don't know which direction to go many times. So it would be a tough one to navigate.
Mm-hmm.
And where is this section at? Where
this
roughly,
was
where are
this
you?
Was roughly, I think, just north of Silver Bay.
Okay, yeah.
And and so this gal comes running off the SHT trail and comes running over to my crew, and she sees all the stuff going on. She says, "Well, what's happening here?" And so they explained to her, you know, that I'm trying to do this FKT, and oh, she thought that was really cool. And then my crew chief, Byron, asked her, "Well, do you want to pace?" And she says, "Oh, I'd love to, but I just ran 11 miles. I'd be wore out, you know." And she says, "But my husband's a runner. Maybe I can talk to him and see if he would help." And so she takes off and goes. She was a local, so she lived real close. So she took off and talked to him. And he said, "Well, you know, I was kind of looking at going to bed early tonight and just putting my feet up and taking it easy." And she said, "Well, these people are really cool, and they're doing this cool thing that's called the FKT, and if you don't go, I'm gonna go." And so he got up and says, "Okay, I'll go." And so he comes up, and Brian was his name, and Brian comes up and agrees to pace me through this whole section. And the thing is, it was in his backyard practically. He knew it.
Oh, great.
Blindfold that he could have done it.
Yeah.
And like I said, it was the longest section and probably one of the hardest to navigate at night.
Uh-huh.
We're doing the whole thing at night. He talked about going to bed early. He didn't get done until 5:30 in the morning. And, you know, paced me through this whole section. So, you know, we called him our golden angel that came up. And that's the kind of thing, you know, there is a lot of luck to this, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, your stars got to align because there's so many things that can happen. And and this one was definitely a positive.
Sure. Yeah,
that's amazing.
Talk about numbers. So what was your crew setup? How many crew people did you have the whole time? I mean, were there rotating people? Did you have like four at all time? And pacers too. How many pacers do you think you had the whole time?
So we had a total crew of pacers and crew. It was about 15 people, but people were rotating in and out.
Mm-hmm.
And so at one time, we probably never had more than three or four people. And part of that was designed because of COVID, you know, to try to keep things manageable there. But you know, the whole rotation, you know, on people and all of that, and keeping tabs on me where I was at, and that takes a lot of energy too, and just trying to coordinate all that. So once I started running, I forgot about it all. I let my crew people manage everything, and you know, there was a lot of things going on that, like one time our truck got stuck in a ditch and I didn't know about any of this. I heard about all this stuff after, you know, but they were just backing up at night and went too far and it's four-wheel drive and they got the four-wheel drive stuck in the ditch, you know.
Yeah.
But ended up getting it out. And so, I mean, there's all these little things that can happen. And you know, luckily, I'm glad I didn't know until after. So
yeah, yeah. So you don't want to be concerned with something right. besides one foot in front of the other.
Right,
I guess, right.
But, I wow. did have one other interesting story that I thought was interesting. Now I've run, I think three now, you know, 200 plus races of like, and I've talked with people that have been running these, and they always talk about them hallucinating during these, and they, and most of their hallucinations sound kind of neat. Like this one guy told me about, he saw a guy playing a grand piano out in the desert, you know, and of course, you know, that's not real, you know. And yeah. so I thought, you know, it would be kind of neat to have an hallucination. And I've run three of these 200 plus mile races, and I've never hallucinated. When I get tired, my head just goes down to my chest and, you know, drops, and, yeah, and I yeah. wake up and I keep running. And then I finally realize, okay, I better take a nap, you know. And but I've never gotten to hallucination. Well, we're in the on the third day, coming into the fourth, the morning of the fourth. It's during the night, but it would be the fourth morning. And it's a 12-mile section I'm running with a gal pacer, and we're running along. And I started off just fine, and we get to about mile six, and I tell her, man, I got to take a nap. I am tired. And she says, well, let's just see if we can go a little further, you know. So we run a little longer, and about another mile and a half. And finally I tell her, man, I got to, I'm just, you know, I'm falling asleep running here. I just, yeah. you know, I'm going to go just go crashing off into the woods. And she says, well, okay, take a nap. So, and I said, just give me 15 minutes. I'll be fine. So I lay down on the trail for 15 minutes. Now I'm dead tired. And all these, any time that I have been sleeping, I'm actually, I think, asleep before I hit the ground, you know, because yeah. most of the time during this, I was sleeping in the back of a Subaru, uh-huh. and I would climb back there, and before I got all the way back, I was already sound asleep.
Wow.
So it only takes me a second to fall asleep, and but I lay down, and the mosquitoes were so thick, and it wasn't that they bothered, you know, I could have swatted 10 at once with one hand on my yeah. face. They were all over me. Ugh. And it didn't bother me a bit, but they came in right into my ears.
Yeah.
And it was the buzzing in my ears that I just couldn't sleep. And so I got up and I said, hey, I can't sleep here.
Wow.
We're just going to have to push through this. And so she says, okay. So we just keep running. And this was an area that was logged. And so we could see quite a distance, even though it was wooded. Uh-huh. And we noticed there were a lot of deer stands. And I kept thinking, and we'd have to bushwhack to get to these deer stands, and then we'd have to climb up some rickety ladder. But I thought, I wonder if there's any mosquitoes in the top of those deer stands if I climbed up. And so I was really thinking about each deer stand I would see, and we saw like a half a dozen. And I, you know, I wonder if that would be, you know, if I could sleep in one of those stands. But I never... I just didn't have the energy to bushwhack
yeah.
to get to one and then climb all the way yeah. up and then find out there's mosquitoes up there as well.
Right.
So we just kept going. And then finally, you know, I started, everything I looked at, all the natural things around turned to material things.
Hmm.
So for example, I saw a fern leaf and it turned to a wooden pallet. Everything was man-made that I saw.
Huh.
And I could see the similarities, you know, the leaves coming out, the veins, it looked just like a wooden pallet. And the rocks would look like hubcaps and stumps would look like something else
oh,
and
weird.
Trees. And everything turned to man-made things that, and pretty soon, you know, the ground was dry up there and it was all cracked.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon the ground looked like I was running on a metal grate.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started feeling unsafe because I was on this metal grate.
Yeah.
And it just kept, everything kept getting stronger and stronger. You know, at first it was just a few things, but then it was pretty soon everything. There was nothing natural
like
around
me. Like you were in a junkyard or something.
Yeah, like I was in a junkyard. That's a great example. And I knew in my mind that this wasn't real.
Yeah.
But my eyes were telling me,
wow,
this was what's here. And it's like, and then we were about a mile from the crew, and quite often, when we got a mile from the crew, I would tell my pacer to run up ahead to have the crew get ready so they knew I was going to come and what to have ready for me. And she says, should I run ahead? And I said, no, you stay right next to me because I don't know what's coming next.
Oh, no.
I might go running off in the woods here. Wow. Just stay right next to me, you know.
So your pacer, you're like, is that a hubcap?
Well, see, I knew, though.
Yeah,
right. I could always tell myself that this wasn't real, but it's like everything, my eyes were saying it was real.
Wow.
And yet my mind knew it wasn't real. But there was nothing, I had no control over it.
Yeah.
And so now I can't say I haven't hallucinated.
Yeah. Right.
But I would have to say if I don't ever do it again, I'll be fine.
Right. I mean, that's a lot of challenges. Just the trail itself, sleep deprivation, you know, crew has to be just perfect. Mm-hmm. Bugs. I mean, what do you think was the biggest challenge of the trip?
Well, you know, and if that specific incident that I just told you about, as I came off the trail, you know, I was, you know, I said, I want to sleep, you know, and
yeah.
I didn't even care about food, anything. I just wanted to sleep.
Yeah.
And before I jumped in the back of the Subaru, they said, hold it. And I said, what's up? And they started picking, they picked over 40 wood ticks off me.
Wow.
And that I got in that section. Yeah. So, I mean, I was just loaded with wood ticks. And,
yeah.
Of course, I had no idea, you know,
yeah.
that they were even there. And
right,
I'd care less, actually. But so, you know, but the bugs, you know, were there. I remember the very start, the black flies were really bad.
Yeah.
And but then they were there for like 2 hours and the temperature changed and they disappeared. It was like magic.
Right. Yeah.
And because it got cooler at night. And so, bugs can be a factor. And I think it depends a lot on how you react to the bugs. For me, the most part, I'm pretty okay with that stuff. But, you know, as it goes on, you could care less.
Right. Well, and I think you had probably pretty much perfect conditions in terms of like mud, moisture on the trail, wetness.
Yeah, it was almost ideal. I had one time where we got rained on pretty hard for about 3 hours straight. But other than that, it was dry the whole time.
Wow.
There were still some muddy sections. I believe there's some sections there that we could have a drought for 2 months and they'd still be mud there.
Right.
Yeah.
There's just a couple spots.
Just
a couple and, you know, it's maybe too hard to get boardwalks in some of those areas.
Right.
But yeah, there was, that's why I say this trail is either mud, rocks, or roots.
Right.
Yep. So Michael, post-event, how did you feel? How did you sleep? How hungry were you? How was your eating for a few days? And how about physically, how sore were you?
And like now, are you back? You know?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I ran 6 miles yesterday. So, so, you know, I lost about 12 pounds.
Wow.
And I'm probably, I have a physique that probably doesn't need to lose any weight, you know. So, and I've been finding that it's not coming back as fast as I thought. And I've been eating like a horse, you know.
Uh-huh.
So the other day when I hopped on the scale, I had only gained 3 of those 12 pounds back, you know.
Wow.
So, I'm gaining it back in muscle and not in fat, you know.
Yeah.
But we'll see. But anyway, it was actually quite easy. But, you know, the pace is slow.
Yeah.
And so I think my legs were fine within 2 days after. And when I saw you, you know, I was running pretty strong.
Yeah.
But my feet really got sort of banged up. I got... I had a blister on the bottom of each heel, about the size of a silver dollar, and those were sore. And then I had a blood blister. Those were water blisters. I had a blood blister on each big toe, on the side of each big toe, and then a couple other water blisters. And so the big thing was my feet were sore, and that took a little more time. But the hardest one was the sleep deprivation. That was, it felt like I think the easiest way to describe it is jet lag.
Yeah.
And I almost didn't know what time of day it was, or if I did, you know, even if I slept all the way through the night, I know for 3-4 days there, I would take three or four naps during the day. I would do something for a couple hours, and then I had to take a nap. I just would feel tired and would have to go take a nap, get up, and, you know, do a couple hours again, and then have to take another nap. And
did you find you had trouble sleeping through the night, or was your just sleep in general affected after?
Yeah, I know the first night, boy, I had a lot of weird dreams. And I'm not even sure what they were, but they were all trail related. Yeah. You know, just I don't think my head had realized that I had stopped running. And it was like still, I was still like pushing myself down the trail, you know. And so I think the first night or two, I slept through the nights, but they weren't, you know, they probably were, you know, injected, especially with a lot of dreaming that was tossing me around, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think after that, I was good, but it just needed a lot of sleep. And that was the hardest part, was the sleep deprivation.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if I were like the guy that's going to be trying it here soon, him and I talked and he asked what advice, and I told him that, you know, of course everybody's body's different, but I said I had planned, my plan going into this was to run the first day and night with no sleep. I thought that would be quite easy, and it was. And then after that, to get an hour every night and an hour every morning. And so that was my plan, and that worked fine up until 3.5 days. And then after that, I was getting behind, and it was really catching up to me. And and so I advised him that, and it's one of those things, when you get behind on sleep, if you try to get more sleep, if you get behind, you don't really catch up. It's sort of like, it's almost like being dehydrated. It's harder to catch up. You know, you can't just go drink a little that you missed.
Right.
You gotta, so it's, I think sleep is similar. You have to, so I would advise, if somebody's thinking about this, if, you know, if you can do the trail in 3 days, you're probably fine. But if you're going to go longer, you got to pack in a little more sleep towards the end, because your body just can't handle it.
Yeah.
At least mine can't.
I don't know anyone who could. I mean, it's outrageous.
Yeah.
What do you think the limit is?
I think around 4 days is about... I mean, I think, you know, if you really got somebody that dialed it in and everything went perfect, that you might be able to squeak under 4 days. But I don't think much under 4 days is the limit. Because there's, you know, no matter how good a runner you are, there's sections that you, no matter how good you are, you can only run so fast.
Right.
And you know, and we ended up recording about 70,000 vertical feet in the length of the trail. And now, you don't associate a trail here with those kind of numbers of 70,000 feet. That's more like out west, right? And but that trail goes up and down so many times that you just don't realize how many vertical feet you're putting on as well.
Right.
So it's, you know, we ran down to the lake and back, I don't know how many times.
Yeah.
And then, of course, even when you're not going down to the lake, you're going up and down. Mm-hmm. There's not many sections that are really flat until you get south of Two Harbors.
Yeah.
And even those, you know, they're only relatively flat.
Relatively. Right, right.
They're
still
not
hills.
Flat. It's still hilly, see. Yeah. So it's, it's kind of amazing what the numbers are.
Wow.
When you look at that.
Wow.
So...
Well, I know, Tony, unless you have any other questions about the FKT Speed Hike Trail in specific, I'm super curious, Michael, to just hear about your running history.
Yeah, let's hear about that, kind of how you got started with running, and who it was that got you going.
Well, bottom line is, when people ask me that, is I just say I've been running my whole life, because I started in junior high and high school.
Yeah.
And have never really stopped. And they had a crazy thing when I was in, I went to Coon Rapids High School, which was the biggest school in the state at that time when I graduated in 69. And it was the biggest school in the state. And so the they had this plaque in the trophy case. And you can imagine, of course, a powerhouse with the school that we had that, you know, we were strong in every sport and, and typically, you know, state champions in half of them, you know. So in when they had in the trophy case, they had this one plaque with one name on it. And the plaque was called the Thousand Mile Club. And the name of the one person was Scott Walker. I mean, I thought kind of a oxymoron there that Walker, you know, was on the Thousand Mile. And he was the only name on this. And this plaque had been there for like 10 years in the trophy case. So I asked my coach, I said, what's that all about? You know, and he says, well, when this school year gets done and when it starts, you have to run 1,000 miles. And if you do that, you get your name on the plaque. And so my junior year, when I finished up my junior year in high school, I said, I'm going to go for that. And I did the math. It turned out I had to run 13 miles a day, every day for the summer until school started. Now, 13 miles doesn't seem like a lot, but when you're a high school kid and the longest run you've ever done is 3 miles.
Yeah.
Now to, and then if you miss a day, the next day you got to do a marathon.
Now, were you running at this point? I mean, were you on the team or anything?
Yeah, I was doing cross country and track.
Okay. Yeah.
It's kind of funny because I started, my main sport originally was wrestling.
Okay.
And I went out for cross country to get in to stay in shape for wrestling.
Right.
And I loved running so much, I dropped wrestling. So I ended up in doing those. But anyway, so I decided, okay, I'm gonna do this, and I did do it. I remember after 2 weeks, calling my coach and saying, "Oh, my shin splints are killing me. I don't know that I can keep doing this. You know, my shins, because I was running all these miles on tar, not knowing any different." But and he's told me how to tape them, and he says, "You know, this might help you," and it did help, and I ended up getting through it and was able to get through it. But so I got the second name on this plaque.
Wow.
And but you know, this was the dumbest thing that they could have had, because I ended up when cross country started in the fall of my senior year, I was a pretty good runner. I ended up being so slow because I had run 13 miles a day for every day through the summer, and I was used to that pace, you know. And in cross country in high school, you're running a pretty good clip.
Yeah.
Well, it turned me into a turtle.
Yeah.
You know, and just ruined me as a cross country runner.
Oh.
And I thought, why would they even have this plaque there if that's the case? But, you know, it's one of those things. And
yeah.
So I'd have to say I started my ultra running sort of career in as a junior in high school.
Yeah. Wow.
And then I got, after that, I got into doing ultra triathlons.
Mm-hmm.
All the ones that I did were canoeing segments instead of swimming.
Sure.
And so, like, I did the border-to-border 2 years in a row. Mm-hmm. The second year, our team set a course record. You do it as a team. Mm. And so, you know, got into doing all that and did that for quite a few years, ultra triathlons. Mm. There's a number of them around Wisconsin and Minnesota. And
sure.
And you know, the hardest part about that is they're all team events.
Right.
Plus, you got to have all this gear. I did do, there was a couple of them that you could do solo. So I had a solo canoe.
Uh-huh.
And I did a couple of them. There was one in Bemidji that you could do solo. And you know, the gear part of it was like unreal.
Right.
You know, it's just.
So generally mountain bike or road bike?
It was both.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. Uh-huh. The Bemidji one was a mountain bike. Most of them were road bikes, but yeah, variety. And it didn't matter. I just, whatever kind of bike I needed, I would hop on it. But
But
just all the gear and all the stuff you had to manage, it was like doing this FKT with all the work that was, you know,
right,
to get that set up. And so I started, you know, I really always loved the running, and running was always my strong suit.
Sure.
And so I just sort of naturally kind of started dropping the other ones. I then got into biathlons.
Uh-huh.
And then pretty soon just dropped the bike altogether and just ran and got into triathlons, you know, doing just road or trail runs. And
okay.
Now that's pretty much all I do is trail runs. I love trail running.
Yeah. So you've been doing, I mean, endurance sports for a long, long time.
Yeah, I'd say pretty much my whole life. In fact, I'll just throw an interesting story that I found out. One time I was at a friend's house, and we had a little potluck, and we're sitting around, and just a couple of days before, I had done the Superior 50 miler.
Yeah.
And we're sitting around after this, and one of the gals there was a nurse, and I had said, God, my chest hurts, you know? And she says, oh, you got to go to the ER right now. You got to go. And I said, oh, come on. Now, if I was going to have a heart attack or something, it would have happened 2 days ago when I did the 50-miler, you know?
Yeah.
And she says, no, you got to go. And I said, well, okay, as soon as we get done eating, on the way home, I'll stop at the ER.
Uh-huh.
And so we go. We end up going to the ER, and they're doing all these checks on me, and the doctor's asking me all these questions, you know, and trying to figure out why the center of my chest hurts, and the X-ray technician comes over and gets me, and they take a chest X-ray, and then he pulls me over after, and he says, look at your lungs. And I said, well, what's different? He says, well, most people's lungs stop at the bottom of their rib cage. He says, your lungs go a third past your rib cage.
Wow.
So I don't know if that was a genetic thing that I have bigger lungs, or that was because I've run almost my whole life.
Yeah.
You
right.
know? And so I don't know which it is, but that was kind of an interesting thing to see happen.
Maybe a little bit of both or something.
And we found out the reason I was sore was the 50 miler that year was real wet.
Uh-huh.
And so to avoid the puddles going down the middle of the trail, I was grabbing trees to swing around the puddles.
Yeah.
And so that ended up getting
it was muscular.
Yes, giving me a sore chest.
Oh,
and
buddy.
So it was so silly, you know, the whole thing, you know. But
all legs, huh?
It took it just took a while to figure that all out, you know, what was causing it, but
huh.
So I ended up being fine, you know, just needed to recover.
Yeah. So do you have any favorite races from across the years that you especially like? Or do you have a race distance that you kind of tend to prefer?
I like the 200s, you know, Candace Burt's 200s. One thing about it is I find that when I run those longer races, your pace is slower and I can eat almost anything.
Yeah.
And so I like the idea that I can eat real food. I kind of like the mental challenge of that comes with the longer races like that.
Yeah.
100s I find are you know, the mental challenge isn't quite as steep, but it's more of the physical challenge of the pace.
Right.
And I find the pace is such that it's harder for me to, sometimes the food part becomes a problem.
Right.
You know, always
right.
getting enough calories in.
Yeah.
Where I never have that problem in the longer races.
You can afford to sit down and eat like a triple cheeseburger.
Right, yeah. right, right. Yeah. And so I do like, I love her races, and, you know, it's the terrain that she has, you know, it's always a loop, so you're never seeing the same thing twice, so I always like new territory that you're covering, you know. But uh-huh. I did the Race for All Ages, which is a 1 mile loop in a park, and you go around and around. It's a unique race in that it's over Labor Day weekend in Tennessee. It's one of Laz's races, you know, so you can tell right away it's going to be a weird race.
Yeah.
And you start based on your age. You have, and I was 68 the year that I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have the number of hours to run that you are old.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, if you're older, you get more hours to run, right?
Okay.
Everybody gets 40 hours, no matter how old you are. But then if you're older, you get that much more. So you start based, everybody starts at a different time.
Sure.
But we all finish on Monday, Labor Day weekend.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I did that, and it's, like I said, a 1 mile loop, very hot in Tennessee on Labor Day weekend. The heat, I have invented this hat called the ice hat.
Uh-huh.
Which and I made a big modification to it for that race, and which worked out perfectly because they said at one time the tar was reading 150 degrees out there when we were running. I think the real temp was probably in the high 90s with humidity similar.
Brutal.
And yeah, very brutal, the heat. And it doesn't cool off that much at night either. So, you know, you're just, you gotta be acclimated to the heat. And so anyway, I ended up, the course record was 210 miles. I did 228.
Wow.
And the guy that finished second that year was 202. So I beat the course record by 18 miles. But, you know, that's another type of event where you're just going a mile after a mile after a mile, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just another mind game that you have to play, you know. So.
Wow. That's wild. Well, I guess my main question, just hearing your history, is, you know, what's your secret? How, after all these years of, you know, putting your body through a lot, how do you stay healthy? How do you keep doing these pretty incredible feats of athleticism, you know, at the age of 69?
Well, I think the first thing is you ignore that number and you just do what you feel.
Yeah,
you know? And
yeah.
You know, we all have a chronological age, but we all feel whatever we feel. And so I think it's important to just ignore that number and ignore all the things that come with that number and just do what you're capable of doing. And part of that then is training.
Mm-hmm.
And I do train hard. I work hard to get in shape. But I think it kind of depends on the event. I like to push myself, and so I like the challenge to see, you know, what I can do, what my body can handle. And so I kind of through my training try to set realistic goals whenever I enter an event.
Mm-hmm.
and try to have some realistic targets. I usually set those pretty high, like I did for the FKT.
Yeah.
But then I realize that, you know, I'm maybe will not achieve them unless everything goes perfectly. And so again, I just give it 100%, and then wherever things happen to be, you know, that's however it comes out, that's what happens. But
yeah.
I don't think I have any secrets. You know, I don't do any special dieting. I don't think I train any different than most people are training. I think the bottom line is just you got to do what you love doing. I love running, and you got to just ignore if somebody says, hey, you're too old to do that. You know, you just do it anyway. If you think you can do it, you can do it. And a lot of that's in the mind, you know, especially these kind of distances.
Uh-huh.
It's all up in the head. A big part of it is.
Absolutely.
I mean, certainly you got to train, but but there's a point there where it's really just in your head. And if you can tell yourself that you can do it, there's probably a good chance that you can, I think.
There has to be a trick with that. I mean, do you have any kind of methods to, I don't know, trick your brain? Or, I mean, do you have are you a mantra type person? Or
I'm not. I've tried it a few times. It's never worked for me. So I don't have any secrets there. I just simply, you know, I set a goal and I try to push myself as much as I can. I enjoy watching my body, and I can kind of separate myself a little from the pain and discomfort that you get. Mm-hmm. I'm able to do that, and sort of, I like to kind of watch. It's almost like I'm separate from my body, and I watch what's happening, and I like to see myself go through new stages that I've never had to go through before, and how I'm going to react and what that makes me focus on. And so I have the same mental games that everybody else has. I just think that I just don't probably take them maybe quite as serious. I realize what they are, you know. I see them for what they are, and that they're just a thing that your mind plays with you to try to stop you.
Uh-huh.
And that most of the time you don't really need to stop.
Yeah.
You know, of course, if I get injured, like the first time I tried, I realized I needed to stop.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, that you have to stop. You have to know your limits, you
right.
know, and when it's necessary to stop. So
I am kind of curious about just your training regimen and kind of your diet too, you know, not, that you mentioned that. You said it's nothing really out of the ordinary, but let me ask you this. Does your training differ if you're doing a extreme long event, you know, over 100 miles versus something shorter like a 50 mile?
Yes.
You kind of just try and stay in good shape all year round, or what's your...
Yeah, well, I do. I train all year round, and I cross-country ski as well, and so I... but, yeah, for the FKT, my main focus there was, and Stephanie really helped me with this, was that I tried to do three long runs back-to-back, and I've never done... I used to do two. I thought two was enough, but she had me doing three. I mean, each one would be a little bit less than the previous one. But
like a Friday, Saturday, Sunday or
yes,
something?
Yes, okay. Right. Friday, yeah. Saturday, Sunday, exactly. And so I would do those, and I really think that helped me too, because and you're not only training your body to stay out there and then, you know, the next day go back out and you're not recovered. You're having to push yourself when you're tired.
Yeah.
And training with that feeling in mind, but I think it also then helps your mind get trained and get ready to be out there during those fatigue times.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was a big help. I was kind of surprised because I was putting in, the first year I tried the FKT, I was putting in about 90 miles a week.
Mm-hmm.
And with Stephanie, I was at least almost 10% less than that.
Mm.
Which I was surprised, but we did more in those 3 days, and then the other days were, you know, really just recovery runs.
Yeah.
So I think it was a good focus where I and with her too, we never had a... I used to do like 4 hard weeks, and then I would take a week and have it be easy to let everything recover. And I thought I needed to do that, and she showed me through my training that I don't need to. I could just pound it every week, one right after another, and
wow.
never let up, and so I didn't. And
wow.
But I didn't think I could do that, but she showed me that I could, and so I'm glad that I learned that. And
right.
You know, of course, if I were to feel something, I'm sure she would have had me back off some. But my body held up. And, you know, I think, you know, of course, the key there is some of those basic rules about increasing no more than 10%. You know, some of those little safety guidelines that we all try to follow.
Right. And I have to ask, you know, as well, injuries. I mean, you've been running a long time. You've done, you know, some long races, big training weeks. Have you had any big injuries? And what do you do to kind of avoid injury?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I started doing weights, which are, you know, kind of core strength weights. They're nothing real special, but free weights mostly.
Uh-huh.
And I started doing those, I think, like roughly seven years ago. And ever since I started doing those, I have not been injured.
Huh.
And you know, I know that the literature says that as you get older, you need to do weight exercises because we're losing muscle mass, you know,
right.
a couple percent every year. And so if you don't do weights, it's even more important for older people than younger. But I think it's important for everybody. And I've talked to a few ultra runners, and they've laughed at me that I'm so dedicated in doing my weights all the time.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's kept me injury free, I, you know, I can't say exactly that's it, but I have not been injured since I've been doing weights, and I've done more, pushed myself harder, and done more extreme events every year, and yet no injuries. So,
what's your weight program? Or I mean, are you doing like just 1,000 bicep curls with a 5 pound, or what's the, you know?
No, I try to do. The rules that I've heard is you do sort of maximum weights with about 8 to 12 reps.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, pretty much as many as the heaviest weight that you can apply for that many reps.
Like full body, like bench press, everything? Or?
Yeah, I do all, most everything I use is dumbbells because they're getting all the micro muscles. I stay away from the machines and the barbell, more the dumbbells, because you're really getting into the micro stuff.
Yeah.
And I do read a lot about and listen to a lot of different podcasts besides yours about and try to get tips on, you know, how's the best way to train and do all this. So I listen to all that stuff and so try to do things that's also based on science and stuff. But I don't know that I'm doing everything perfectly, but I do think it's really helped me to do weights and to try to do them, you know, by doing the dumbbells, you're getting more into those micro muscles, which in an ultra, you need every micro muscle.
Oh, yeah.
I think you challenge. I mean, you're moving and turning and
grabbing onto trees.
And... Yeah, right. So yeah. So you've it's not like a road run where you just do. It's just more straightforward. You know, you're just
you're right.
Jigging and jogging all the time.
Yeah.
So I think it's worked for me and. You know, I'm always open to new things. So, you know, if I hear of something new, I will certainly look at it.
You know, if they say if it ain't broken, don't fix it. You know,
yeah.
7 years doing the weights, yeah.
But I realize at my age that I can't do this forever, and there's going to be a time when I won't be able to do it. But I figure until that's there, I might as well keep doing these things. So I look at. You know, events. I've got some goals in the future, and I hope I can accomplish those before my body says we're done. But until then, I'm going to keep going until it tells me I can't.
Yeah. Wow. That's wild. You say age is not a number, but really, I think it's extraordinary. I think.
Yeah. And thank you.
I think it's hopefully inspiring to everyone. You know, everyone has the chronological. Clock, right?
Sure.
You know, you just hear that so much, I think, is like, well, I can do that, you know, I've passed my prime or something like that. Like people my age in their 30s are saying that, right?
Okay. Yes, right.
And so I think it's very inspiring.
Yeah, and I hope that does inspire people that, you know, don't let age be something that stops you from doing what you want to do. You know, if you love doing it, you should be doing it and forget about age. It's just, you got to just go out and do it. And one other thing I'll say is that, you know, people are listening. You know, if you're thinking about doing a will and things like that, again, remember in your will to give back to the things that you love to do. And one thing that my wife and I have decided is, you know, we love the Superior Hiking Trail and we have that in our will that a portion of our estate is going to go to the Superior Hiking Trail. And I would encourage people to think about the things, you know, it doesn't have to go to the Superior Hiking Trail. I'm not saying that. I'm saying if whatever you love doing, support it after you're gone. And your legacy can be that you're supporting the things that you love. And I think that's an important message.
I think so too, yeah. Just the passion.
Yes.
It's clear that you're very passionate. Michael, yeah.
Thank you.
I guess the last question that I can think of, and I've been just racking off questions,
that's
Tony,
all right,
sorry.
That's
but,
all right. That's
okay, so say there's someone out there listening who hears you and says, well, Michael's favorite race distance is 200 miles. I wonder if I should do something like that. What advice would you give to someone who wants to go into these? I don't want to say it's a taboo, but this is a niche of ultra running is these 100 mile plus events, right?
I mean,
that's pretty out there, you know?
Well, I mean, I do think if you're going to do a 200, it would be good to probably do 100 first. you know, I mean, I've heard of people that don't, but to me, it would make some sense. And of course, I've done a lot of hundreds, but there isn't really much from 100 to 200. You know, there isn't like a 150 or a 1, you know, something in between. It's, and the bottom line is you have to take that jump. And I think it's like so many things in life. Don't be afraid to take that leap. Train for it, you know, think about it, plan it, I mean, people that know me know that I plan every detail down to the, you know, smallest detail that I can plan. But, you know, of course, the best, we all know too, as an ultra runner, you can make the best plans and they go out the window after you stop or get off the starting line.
Right.
So, but it's still important to plan and train. But I think, you know, don't be afraid to take that leap if you want to try it. Take the leap from whatever distance you're comfortable to the 200s. There, it's a different animal. It's totally a different animal. It's not that it's, but it's not any more impossible than any of those other events. You know, I feel sometimes when I look back, I was more beat up after doing a marathon, and I've run 20 some marathons, than I am after doing any of these other events that I do.
Yeah.
Man, I can remember coming in, you know, the next day having to walk downstairs backwards and, you know, just, and I'm never that beat up anymore.
Right, right.
So, you know, if you can do a marathon, you probably can do any of the stuff I'm doing.
Yeah.
I think you'll end up less beat up.
My joke is always that, you know, a 50-mile trail run is kind of like the pain of a 5K, but spread out over 12 hours.
Yes, yes, that's a good way, yes, yes, yeah. Yeah, to me, if I think about doing a 5K now, that's like, oh, man, that would be painful.
Yeah.
Because it's like, for me, it would be now literally a sprint.
Yeah.
You know, even though my pace wouldn't be a sprint, but it would feel like the effort would be a sprint. You might as well put me in a 100-yard dash because that's the way I'd have to approach it.
Yeah, right.
And so the effort to finish a 5K would be, like, horrendous, you know. I don't even know if I could do that anymore, you know.
Yeah, I hear you. It's funny. So, yeah. So what's next?
Well, I am signed up for Tunnel 100, and my goal there is to break the course record, which is, I think, 25:37. I think I can actually, I'm going to go there. My plan is to try to run a sub-23-hour run there.
Wow. That's moving.
But now I don't know if they're going to have it, so that's the big thing, you know, is it's in middle of November. Hmm. It's considered probably the fastest 100-mile course in the nation. So, you know, so it's very runnable.
Is that for your age bracket?
Yeah, that would be for my age. Yeah,
sure.
For my age bracket, yeah.
Yeah.
No, Zach Bitter's got that.
I was going to say, that's like a 13 or something.
16, I think, or something. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm not in that caliber.
Yeah.
But yeah, in my age bracket. And then, I qualify every year for Western States, and my goal is to, you know, I want to get into Western States, and I'm in the lottery, but, you know, of course, now again, there's no going to be no lottery probably next year, and my goal is to get in and at 70 to try to break the course record at Western States,
which is
27 something, some change. And I think I'm capable of doing that as well.
Yeah.
But, of course, I got to get in to do it.
Right.
You know? So I don't know how I'll ever get in, but I think I got 32 entries next year. But
wow, yeah.
So just, if it happens, it happens. You know, if it doesn't, it doesn't. So it's okay.
Cool.
Yeah.
Any other, like, fastest known time or kind of those type events?
I've been looking at the section off the Canadian SHT there where it goes, trying to think what they call that.
The border route trail?
Yeah.
Is that the one?
Yeah. The one there, it's, I think the record is just like, just had a tad over 24 hours and and it's like 67 miles. And I've thought about doing that one. In fact, that's one I looked at even before the SHT. I've got to do some exploring there because I've heard the hardest thing is the navigating.
Right.
It's really
wayfinding.
It's not very, the trail's not kept up very well.
That was with my experience up there on it one time. This is probably 4 years ago. It was hard to find the trail.
Yep. And from what I've read is people are getting lost all the time.
Yeah.
So that would be, something I'd have to check out a little
bring
bit.
Bring your loppers. Run with your loppers.
Yeah. So I've thought of that one. But, you know, we'll see what happens, you know.
Yeah. Cool. Tony, do you have any other questions at all?
No, I don't think so.
Well, thank you for both of you for having me
here. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for coming on the show. Yeah. I really appreciate it. It was great.
Yeah, okay. Cool.
Thanks.
All right, and that wraps up episode number 22 of the Duluth Rundown Podcast. I want to thank Michael Coppy for coming on and telling us a really cool story about not only his recent FKT, but also just kind of his running in general. It was really cool to hear from him.
Definitely.
Yeah, Mike, what do you have to say?
I have to say to everyone, go out, get a run in, check out the trails, and yeah, we'll see you next time.
Go out to Chester and do a virtual 5K, 10K, or 6 hour.
Yeah.